It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Jenny Mattingly, and I've got a couple guests with me here in the studio and one on the phone. I've got Julie Perkins, who's going to be helping me out on the hosting side this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. And then I've got Jesse Clement from NARF. Hello.
Hi, Jenny. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And I've got Robin Kehoe with FIA here. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Yeah. And then Megan Walsh, who's with NAGE. And we're going to do, of course, a recap of the shutdown because we're in that same week. Couldn't do a radio show without talking about the shutdown. So going to be talking about what we saw and what we can expect over the next few months, because this isn't really going away, a lot of the issues that were with us. But just a quick reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. And if you'd like to join our discussion today and speak directly to our guests, call our toll-free number at 1-877-936-9333 or email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So wanted to start with a little bit about each of you, just so our listeners know who we're talking to. Robin, you can tell us a little bit about FIA. I know a lot of people probably heard quite a bit about FIA. We hope they've heard.
We hope they've heard about FIA. So FIA, which is the acronym we use because it's easier than saying Federal Employee Education and Assistance Fund.
Well, and everybody loves acronyms here.
Exactly. We're all about acronyms. So we are a nonprofit organization that helps civilian federal and postal employees and their families, just like the military relief agencies help folks in uniform. So we do emergency financial assistance when there are personal emergencies or natural disasters that affect feds. And then we also run a scholarship program. So our program has been getting an awful lot of use since the beginning of the spring.
I bet. And really, since the economic downturn a couple years ago, there's been
absolutely. I mean, in the last 5 years, our emergency assistance program has tripled in size.
Which is incredible. But in a bad way, you wish people weren't doing
exactly.
You know in that situation.
And I think that's a story that doesn't get out there that much. That the economic situation has affected federal employees just as much as it's affected other Americans.
And we probably haven't even seen the fallout from this last shutdown, where people were. I mean, I know you guys have seen it
some of it,
but I
do think it's it definitely is a cascading kind of thing.
Yeah.
And with another potential for that coming in January, it's going to be a little rough for a long time.
Scary. So, but at any rate, we'll talk a little bit more about some of what you guys are seeing and have heard from folks. And I did want to take a minute. I think, Megan, are you with us now on the phone?
I am. Sorry about that before. I'm glad to be here with you guys this morning.
No problem. Great to have you. Megan, can you tell us, we're just doing introductions, about a little bit about your group. You're the federal legislative director for NAGE. And you want to tell us a little bit about who NAGE represents and what you guys are working on?
Yeah, so I work for the National Association of Government Employees. Our organization represents about 100,000 public sector employees across the government, including federal employees. Most of our federal members work at the Department of Defense, the Department of Veteran Affairs, the Department of Transportation, and the Interior. We've seen a lot of our employees both be furloughed this time because of the government shutdown and also because of the sequester. So what we've been trying to do, is advocate for them both through the media and through legislative channels to try to ensure that federal employees are, not being as adversely impacted each time we are running into something.
Right. And it's been a lot of the same issues that most of the groups have faced, although you guys have, well, like you said, a bulk at DOD, so that's had certainly a different impact than some of the other agencies.
Absolutely. Fortunately, we saw that some of our members who had been subject to furloughs during the sequester cuts were accepted from the furloughs this time. But a bulk of our DOD employees were still furloughed for a second time, and that's been a huge difficulty for these individuals, especially those that are in lower DS levels or lower grade wage levels, because, you know, they're not making a ton of money. And to see, you know, one paycheck, let alone multiple paychecks, be taken away from them is causing a lot of financial hardship for these employees.
Right. Everybody's facing some difficult times over the last few weeks, and we'll circle back around to that in a minute. But I wanted to give Jesse a chance to tell us a little bit about NARF. And you also handle legislation, legislative director for NARF. So
thanks, Jenny. Much like Robin and Fio, NARF is certainly easier to say than the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association.
A little bit long.
Which NARF is. We represent the interests of the 5 million active and retired federal employees and their spouses and survivors. I know a lot of people think of NARF as the federal retiree organization. That's what we were for a long time. However, we do advocate for the active employees as well. And we have heard from a lot of our active members over the last few weeks wondering when they're going to get paid, when they can go back to work, and, you know, the general anxiety that they're feeling these days.
Well, and all the issues, too, that have been leading up to this. Federal employees, this is not new, unfortunately. So a lot of the same issues at play during the shutdown that we'll see going forward and that we've been seeing for the last 3 years now.
Three years.
Mm-hmm. So that we've really ramped up. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk a little bit first about is people going back to work. Clearly, yesterday was the first day back after 2.5 weeks. So we had a deal that put people back to work. And I think most people are probably fairly familiar, but do a quick rundown, Jesse, if you want to, real quick, and
sure,
what you saw.
The deal that passed the House and Senate late into the night on Wednesday and then signed by the president very early Thursday morning put people back to work that day. It raised the debt ceiling until February 17th and funds federal agencies at FY13 levels until January 15th. However, while those are two very important dates, I feel there is a more important date in that legislation that everyone should be aware of. The legislation created a committee, I believe it's about 30 members of Congress, both sides of the aisle, both chambers, and they have to come up with a budget framework by December 13th.
Yeah, the 13th.
And then if they do not, Congress then has until January 15th to figure out funding. If they do, that measure will be voted on, of course, prior to January 15th. The same battles that the federal community has been fighting for the last 3 years, an extension of the pay freeze, an increase in retirement contributions, chain CPI, FEHBP
it's
reform.
All the Simpson Bowles Commission.
All these things still on the table, and we need to keep active until that December 13th date.
Right. And that's going to be something that comes quickly. I mean, we're already almost into November here, so things are going to start trickling out, I think, soon.
Legislating by crisis is what I like to call
that's
it.
That's the newest buzz, by crisis. So I joked the other day it was legislating by 140 characters because everybody tweets about it or tweets at each other. But Megan, one of the things people have been talking about with the going back to work was whether people would know. If you're out in the field and all of a sudden they signed it Thursday morning and people were expected back at work the same day, you know, did federal employees know? Was there any flexibility? And have you guys heard of any difficulties with people getting back to work?
You know, at this point, we are still having communications trickle in from a lot of our members. What we found to be really difficult was, you know, trying to relay information during the shutdown and leading up to the shutdown and, you know, now post-shutdown to the members because they're not allowed to use their federal emails. So a lot of the ways that we typically communicate with our members is through their emails or sending out blasts and directing them to our website or our Facebook. And, you know, unfortunately, we were trying to rely solely on social media to try to get in touch with our members. And now we're kind of, at this point, trying to recap how we can do better in, you know, the next, unfortunately, if there is another time around or, you know, in figuring out ways to communicate with them. I think, you know, a lot of employees, because of this, you know, crisis-by-crisis mode, have become a lot more engaged in what's going on Capitol Hill and, you know, what's going on because it is directly impacting them and have kind of paid more attention to the media and things like that. And I think we're probably more aware of what was going on than they have been in the past. But, you know, that was a challenge for us, and, it continues to be a challenge as we move forward with some of the, you know, other battles that we're looking forward to in, you know, the upcoming year.
Right. It's certainly something I think everybody faced, because majority of people do communicate via their federal emails. So try and you know, the agencies communicate with their employees internally that way. So trying to get that word out when that's cut off. And I do want to stop a minute on that note and take our first break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And when we return, we'll continue our discussion on what we're seeing in the shutdown and what's next.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jenny Mattingly. And here with me in the studio are Julie Perkins, Jesse Clement, and Robin Kehoe talking to me about the shutdown. And we've got Megan Walsh on the phone. And when we left, we were talking about everybody getting back to work. And we were actually off air just joking about how in this area the traffic really picked up right away. So certainly seemed that everybody was excited to be back at work. I know most of my friends and everybody who was off work was. So, but one of the things, you know, within the next week we've talked about is, are we going to see this continue? Are we going to hit another shutdown crisis in December, January as we start going forward? And, you know, I think part of that is going to depend on whether things change. But there are some big issues that everybody's been fighting over, which led to this. Obamacare is one, the Affordable Care Act. Are we seeing that? Have you seen that change at all, Jesse? Do you see the dynamics of the polarization change?
I hate to be the skeptic in the room, but it's kind of a role I've been playing lately, so I'm just going to stick with it. I feel that this piece of legislation gives these budget hawks, the people who know the most about the budget process, less than 2 months to come up with something that they have been able, they've been unable to come up with over the course of the last 2 years. I think a lot of people forget that the Budget Control Act, which led us to sequestration in the first place, passed in August of 2011. These are battles we have now been fighting for the last 2 years that we somehow have to overcome in the next two months. Among those at play is certainly the Affordable Care Act. Most of the Republicans want a delay in implementation, a repeal of the medical device tax, not to mention there is a lot of talk about the government contribution members of Congress and their staff would receive that I do believe many members of Congress are mischaracterizing in their description of what that would be, especially considering they receive government contribution right now under FEHBP. So on top of all the Obamacare issues they're currently fighting, you also have all the other budget battles that we've been fighting for the last 2 years. Entitlement reform, government spending, increase in revenues, taxes for the wealthy. In the next 2 months, they somehow have to come up with something that they've been unable to formulate for 2 years.
Well, and they aren't small issues. Tax reform, entitlement reform, those are huge issues that people haven't been able to figure out for the last 15, 20, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a new issue on some of these things, you know, but there are a couple of things. I keep thinking that one of the frameworks they're going to start looking at again is the Simpson-Bowles report that came out 2 years ago, I guess. Was it 2011 when that came out?
It was 2010. Actually, that's how long we've been talking about these things.
Right.
It was the end of 2010.
So, you know, and there were several things that we've seen some of it play out, but some of them were not just coming through these budget battles. Some of them were also introduced in the president's budget as well that related to federal employees. And Megan, I know NAGE has been really involved in, you know, fighting some of these issues, increase the FERS, the pay raises, some changes to FEHB. Are you guys still working on those and thinking that those are going to be at play here?
Well, we like to call the Simpson Bowles recommendation the greatest hits of federal employee attacks, because there was so much in there that would impact federal employees. You know, I think one of the hardest things for our members is that it hasn't been that they've been asked to contribute necessarily in the broad scope of deficit reduction and long-term deficit reduction, that they've been piecemealed each time a must-pass piece of legislation comes up. So for something that's not related to overall sustainability of the fiscal, you know, stability of this nation, federal employees, you know, would be willing to contribute and, you know, have said their willingness to contribute in order to get our fiscal house in order. But they are seeing themselves be subject to pay freezes and increase in pension contributions for smaller things that aren't for necessarily the greater good of the country. I think we're going to obviously continue to see federal employees be used as kind of this pawn in deficit reduction, because it is low-hanging fruit and it's easy. And unfortunately, some of our friends that we would hope would be a little bit more vocal about supporting federal employees have, you know, had to subside on some of these things. And, you know, unfortunately, we've seen things pass that we're not happy about. But, you know, as Jesse said, we're going to continue to fight to make sure that, you know, federal employees aren't being subject to these without some greater good and, you know, a larger deficit reduction package.
Right. And it's certainly, you know, I think that's the thing, is that a lot of these have gone to pay for other issues or have, you know, just been thrown out there rather than talking about the big broad picture.
Just to piggyback on some of the things Megan had said, every time we talk about a grand bargain, every time we talk about deficit reduction, federal employees are always in the mix. And it has been very easy for members of Congress to conveniently forget that federal employees have already contributed $114 billion towards deficit reduction. That's not shared sacrifice. That's not part of a grand bargain. It is $114 billion from the pockets of federal employees that have been given up for absolutely nothing in return. We've started to take the approach, you know, not only at NARF, but within the Federal Postal Coalition, that this is it. Like, we're done. We've given 114. You've given us nothing back in return. There's been no sort of shared sacrifices. The federal community are the only ones sacrificing at this point in time for deficit reduction, and yet you're continuing to ask us for more. Everyone talks about shared sacrifice, but so far the sacrifice has not remotely been shared.
Well, unfortunately, it's easy to go after federal employees. They're not always understood what they do. One of the hardest things we find is that, you know, and I've worked with multiple of your groups on things like the Public Employees Roundtable and other groups to try to talk about who federal employees are and why they're important to the country. And I think that's, you know, I know some of Senior Executives Association members were very upset to see the idea, this whole essential versus non-essential discussion in the media, because that's really not what these employees were. They're exempt or accepted from being furloughed and from the lapse in appropriations. But the idea that some people may be essential, they're all essential. I mean, we do, you know, government functions. And that certainly seemed to be part of it. Did you hear from folks about issues with having to go to work, having to not go to work? Were people upset about this idea? And do you think there's going to be more discussion on federal employees are good? Jesse, you and I have talked in the past about, is America all of a sudden going to say, oh my gosh, I see what the federal government does for me?
One of the things that really got me during this accepted, not accepted, essential versus non-essential conversation is that there are more people were considered accepted than non-accepted. So more people were working the last couple weeks than were at home on furlough. But I heard time and time again from NARF members that they can't do their job because the people they need to do their jobs well are home on furloughs. I would like to think that there were some very clear examples during the last 2 weeks of what federal employees do and how those services impacted the American people. I mean, nothing is more clear than that, than what happened on the National Mall over the course of the last 2 weeks. But if you were not a tourist in town visiting D.C. during this time, or you weren't out visiting one of our national parks, would you have noticed that your life is different? And I would probably think not. But I think a lot of what our government does isn't meant for you to see. They're undoubtedly, I believe, they haven't released actual numbers, but more than half of the CIA workers were furloughed over the course of the last few weeks. Their job by nature is to be secretive. We're, you know,
You don't want to hear that protection of, you know, if you do hear about our intelligence community or some of our, you know, civilian DOD, it's because there's been a problem.
Right. And you're not going to know how them being furloughed impacted you, but that doesn't mean that them being, quote, you know, non-essential doesn't have broader implications for this country.
Right. Well, and that's going to be the biggest issue, is whether people see this and that changes the debate in Congress. Megan, I know you guys have a huge chunk of folks at DOD, and they were called back, most of them relatively quickly. Not everybody, certainly. Do you think people are going to be facing furloughs and more difficulties as we go forward?
Well, I think just kind of to backtrack quickly on what you guys were talking about people being able to do their jobs as they were deemed, you know, non-essential or essential, and those who are at work not being able to do the jobs. That was one of the things that we heard from a lot of our Department of Defense members, was once they were called back and deemed, you know, essential to the mission of the agency, they were still at work, and because there was no funding for them to do their jobs, or because other colleagues were not accepted from the furloughs, they were kind of back at work and twiddling their thumbs because they weren't able to perform the jobs that they were supposed to be doing based on the lack of appropriations, as well as the lack of colleagues to help carry out those projects that they're working on. So I think that was a big problem as well. I think in terms of people not realizing, you know, what the government does, that's a huge problem. It's the rhetoric that, you know, all three of us have worked with the Federal Postal Coalition and the America Counts on Us group to do and try to change the rhetoric and create an understanding for the general public about what federal employees do. And I think it's something we're going to keep doing, and we have to keep doing as we move forward with all of these different budget battles and, you know, these manufactured crises as we legislate piecemeal. But I think in terms of what federal employees and especially DOD employees are looking at if we continue down this road, and especially if we're looking at another year of the sequester, is not furloughs, and it's not, you know, small little changes to their pay where they're, you know, deemed not essential or essential. We're going to be looking at reductions in force. These people are going to be looking at losing their jobs completely. You know, the Secretary of Defense has already said, as well as other top brass within the Department of Defense, that they can't continue to operate, you know, with furloughed employees or with personnel that is sometimes there and sometimes not there, that they have to make a comprehensive change if they're not going to get the budget that they need and the funds that they need to carry out the mission. They're going to have to change the mission, and with that is going to be, you know, a concentrated effort to reduce personnel, which, you know, I think will have a huge impact on the mission. And these employees, like we said, have already seen hits, have already sacrificed over the last, you know, 3 to 5 years. And for them now to be looking at and possibly facing a loss in their jobs is extremely unnerving for a lot of these people.
Well, and it's the hard part is it's going after people with an axe instead of a scalpel, so to speak. If you do, you know, that conversation of what you really need in an agency doesn't happen, and you're just furloughing people, riffing them. People are leaving the government. We were all talking a little bit ago about how people don't want to stay in the government necessarily if they're going to have to keep facing this. And so it's not a good way of you know, dealing with your workforce. But Megan, I did want to circle back around on something you mentioned, is the America Counts on Us campaign. And I know it's been active via social media, and I think Facebook, Twitter, talking about stories of who federal employees are and what they do for people. Can you tell us a little bit about where people can find out or follow America Counts on Us?
Yeah, a lot of, like you said, a lot of the focus for America Counts on Us has been on social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter, Tumblr, things like that, that, you know, allow for a little more virality and a larger reach to a larger demographic.
And some fun, some fun messages, too.
Yeah, I mean, just to take away from the traditional, you know, editorials or letters to the editor or print, you know, this is a way for us to kind of explore with graphics that people seem to really latch onto and understand and share, you know, rather than just traditional means of getting our message out there. You know, the point of this has been to try to change that drumbeat that the conservatives have kind of made about federal employees, that they're overpaid, beltway, individuals who are lazy and don't want to do their jobs and, you know, need to be sacrificing like the rest of the American public. We've been trying to change that to show people that federal employees predominantly live outside of Maryland, D.C., and Virginia.
I think about 85% are outside this area.
Yep, that 85% of the workforce is outside of the Beltway, and that they're doing these jobs that you may not realize are actually being performed by federal employees in the federal government, that, you know, they're making sure that veterans' disability checks are being processed, that they're inspecting, you know, food, and they're making sure that drugs are tested, that they're ensuring safe air travel, and then also trying to show how the federal facilities in certain areas, you know, whether it's a military installation or a Social Security processing center or what have you, is a big contributor to the success of those local economies. And without those jobs and without those employees working and, you know, getting a paycheck that they can spend in their communities, that's going to have a rippling effect on the rest of the community and the rest of the businesses and the people who live and work in those places.
I think it's something people forget because, again, that's, you know, not necessarily a daily life thing, but just how it works, and you don't see it until it's gone. So can you tell us where people can follow, what the Facebook page is and what the Twitter is?
Yeah, the Facebook page is Facebook.com/AmericaCountsOnUs. And it's the same thing for the Twitter. Actually, you know what? I think it's actually, excuse me, it's Facebook.com/FedPostalCoalition. And then through the Fed Postal Coalition URL, it'll bring you to the America Counts on Us campaign. And you can actually find the links to the Twitter on the America Counts on Us Facebook page. And also, you know, any time that we have done a release or anything like that, it's been posted to the Facebook page, and also, you know, any mentions from the chair of the Federal Postal Coalition, Bruce Moore, that we've had in the press, or if any of the members of our member coalition organization, so any of the federal employees, have been quoted in any publications, we've been trying to share their stories on the Facebook page as well.
Great. Thank you. And we're going to stop and take our halfway break. And Megan, I know you have to jump off, I think, for now. And I want to thank you for being with us. And when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion on the shutdown and also the impacts on federal employees and what FEA has been doing for that. So you're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote, and be sure to request your special federal savings.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk, and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jenny Mattingly, and I'm here with Robin Kehoe of FEA, Jesse Clement of NARF, and I've got Julie Perkins in the studio, who's helping me out a little bit with the hosting. But when we stopped before our break, we were talking about, you know, federal employees, who they are, what they do, and the value of federal employees. And we talked a little bit about the issue that this persistent myth, if you want to call it that, the federal employees are overpaid, that they're not doing anything for the American people, you know, faceless bureaucrats sort of thing. And people forget that these are real people. It's easy to yell about the government. And I personally think there's a lot of overlap between government being Congress and government being federal employees, mm-hmm. that people don't understand that difference. But I think people forget that they are, you know, the things like the shutdown hurt 800,000 Americans, but also those, you know, the other hundreds of thousands who are working and not getting a paycheck. And I think one of the things that FEA sees right up in front is how people are hurting from the economic downturn, from furloughs, from the shutdown, you know. And so maybe that's a story that going forward, you know, I always hope that people understand that these federal employees are people too.
you know, something that Megan said earlier really resonated with me when she said that feds are starting to pay more attention to what's going on with Congress and how that impacts them as employees. And the thing that we've seen is that paying attention and knowing what's going on is great, but it doesn't necessarily translate into the ability to plan for things like furloughs and shutdown.
Well, especially if you hope it's not going to happen and people are saying,
Congress will fix it. You know, everybody's thinking Congress will do its job and fix it. And, you know, we're not going to come up against these deadlines. The government's not going to shut down. You know, there's no way I'm not going to get my paycheck when I'm going to work every day. And we now know that's just not true, unfortunately. And we also see that there are an awful lot of federal employees. And you talked about the economic downturn. You know, we've been 5 years, and in the recovery period of those 5 years, federal employees have been in a pay freeze. They've had increases in their health insurance contributions and in their retirement contributions. So for a lot of feds, it's actually a net decrease in pay over the last few years. And when you throw something like being furloughed on top of that, for an awful lot of federal families, that just it makes it impossible to pay for basic things. I mean, we're not talking about people having their, you know, HBO and sports cable package.
Or their
special
cell phone,
we're talking about people being able to make their rent every month. We're talking about people being able to put food on the table for their kids. And when you throw in things like, you know, some of the things that we've seen are people who have children with life-threatening illnesses. We had one mom very early on in the furloughs this summer who came to us because she was already taking leave without pay 3 days a month because she has a son who is being treated for leukemia, and she has to take him to the hospital for follow-up treatment every month, and had already exhausted all of her leave. So she's taking family medical leave without pay 3 days a month. And then the furloughs added more days without pay. And she's the only source of income in her family.
Right. How do you make ends meet?
How do you make ends meet? And we see so much of that, you know, a lot of the federal employees we're seeing are at the lower GS levels. They are single parents. They are responsible for elderly family members. You know, there's a whole host of things. And one of the things that we see also with federal employees is that their stories often include the fact that they tend to be givers in their personal lives, as well as giving to serve their country as federal employees. They're the ones who, you know, the elderly aunt counts on to take her to doctor's appointments. And they're the ones who take in their parents or their children or their nieces and nephews when those folks don't have a place to live. And that's certainly something that we've seen more of with the general economic situation as well, that feds have been taking in other family members and the increased costs of that. Also,
or they've been affected with a spouse losing their job, or, you know, I mean, economic downturn. I love that federal employee was supposed to be this, you know, if you got a job as a federal employee, you were set, you know, you have this retirement, you had this stable job. Well, sure, kind of, it's not as stable anymore, and it's certainly not, you know, but also if you're the sole breadwinner, or if you have a spouse who was affected, or children, older children, you know, I mean, it's not like you're this bubble where nothing else affects you.
No. And that's something that happened for a lot of feds. You know, they started to be the only person in their extended family who had a paycheck coming in regularly. And when you start trying to help everybody, and then all of a sudden your paycheck gets docked in some fashion because of a furlough or shutdown, you know, we have unfortunately heard stories of federal employees being evicted having their homes foreclosed on, having their cars repossessed, because they're just already living so close to the edge.
Right. And a lot of these folks aren't in this area. These are families who are struggling around the country, because you guys get
these
stories
are people
from everywhere.
All over the country. In the FIA's fiscal year starts at the beginning of May, and between the beginning of May and the end of September, we helped over 700 employees who'd been furloughed, over 1,000 employees overall who had temporary financial difficulties, and they were in 46 states, Puerto Rico, and the District of Columbia.
Wow. I mean, that's what people don't always think of.
Yeah, these are people everywhere. It frustrates me. Occasionally, you'll hear something from Capitol Hill where a congressperson will say, oh, I don't have any feds in my district. And it always frustrates me a little bit, because I want to say, well, you know, do you get mail?
Right.
Do people in your community get Social Security? You know, is there somebody there from the IRS to help when folks have questions? Federal employees truly are everywhere. You know, food safety inspectors,
right. Airports,
Extension Service, Agricultural Extension Service. Those folks are everywhere in rural areas. They are all over the country. They're all over the world.
Right. Well, and, you know, we talk about the economic downturn, but there's also been something that FIA helps with, which we've had little blips of that have affected federal employees, are things like hurricanes and the flooding in Colorado.
Mm-hmm. I mean, right. And that, you know, we had a number of people this summer who were furloughed who were still recovering from Hurricane Sandy on the East Coast. You know, people who still weren't back in their homes because they'd had such extensive damage, and the extra money going to pay for repairs that insurance wasn't covering, and those sorts of things.
And you guys ended up giving out disaster assistance, correct, to some of the folks in Colorado, some of the
folks
with Sandy?
We did. We've been seeing applications from people in Colorado who are affected by the floods. We've seen people who were affected by wildfires out in the West.
Right, because it's been a tough season for that,
right,
too.
And, you know, back in the spring, we had a couple of large tornadoes in the lower Midwest, federal employees affected by those as well. A couple of federal employees who lost their homes in Oklahoma.
The point here is that federal employees are no different than any other American. They have spouses who have lost jobs. They have to deal with natural disasters that hit their area. They're trying to send kids to college. We hear from a lot of people who are helping their grandchildren. Mm-hmm. These people are no different than anyone else, yet there is this perception that they are, and I think that perception is perpetrated not only by members of Congress, but also in the media. I get so frustrated when I see incorrect assumptions about federal employees put out by media outlets.
Right.
Well, I wish that the perception of what's different about feds is that they're serving their country.
Right.
You know, we talk about that a lot with people in uniform. But civilian federal employees are going to work every day for their country.
Right. And it's just a different way of service. So it's interesting. But, you know, another one of the nice things is that for those guys that are really in trouble, he has been there. I mean, that's one of the things. You have helped people through disasters. You have helped people through furloughs. And you helped, you know, several thousand people with thousands of dollars have gone out the door.
Yes.
These folks.
You know, we, as I mentioned, our fiscal year starts at the beginning of May, and we normally do about $500,000 to $750,000 in loans every year in a 12-month period. And we have done 96% of that. We've done almost $600,000 in loans in just 5 months. It's created a real cash crunch for us. And for the first time in 27 years, we've had to really tighten our criteria and unfortunately say no to helping people who otherwise would qualify. We've really had to look at our folks having financial problems because of some of those other extenuating circumstances that we were talking about, sick family members,
not just a furlough.
And that's I hate doing that. I hate that we have to do that.
Right.
But to be responsible financially and make sure that FIA is here to help feds into the future, that's what we've had to be doing right now.
Everybody's making some tough choices right now. So, and I think on that difficult note, we're going to take our last break here and stop and hear a word from our sponsor. When we return, we'll wrap up our discussion and talk a little bit about what we can be on the lookout for over the next few weeks and months. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're entering into the last segment of the show, been talking about the shutdown and federal employees, what they've been going through, and talking a little bit about what organizations are out there representing feds and helping them, which there are quite a few. There are a lot of associations. There are a lot of support groups like FIA. So hoping that everybody can pull together here. And someday I hope to not be having some of these conversations about pay freezes and the hardships that federal employees are facing, although keeps going. It's like Groundhog Day every time we talk about this.
Conversation but, we've been having now for 3 years. Yeah. Like, it'd be nice to talk about something else.
It would. That's what I tell people a lot of times. I'm like, I'd like to be talking about some policy issues rather than
sound policy issues.
So I guess, yeah. But at any rate, we are facing, end of October here. We've got a couple more months till the end of the year. And we've talked a little bit about what to expect in terms of budgets. I know we're going to be looking at some other issues, not just budgets will be the headliners, but that's not going to be the only issues that are going to come up. But I did, before we left some of the topic of FIA, I want to talk about some of the things you've been focusing on over the last few weeks that were interrupted by the shutdown, which was the combined federal campaign. And that started after Labor Day.
Right. That starts after Labor Day every year. It's the largest federal workplace giving campaign in the world, and it gives federal employees the opportunity to make donations to charitable organizations from their paychecks. So they make their pledges during the fall campaign, and then that money starts coming out of their paychecks in January and goes through the following calendar year. FIA, as an organization for federal employees only, relies pretty heavily. About 20% of our budget every year comes from combined federal campaign, from feds helping each other, feds helping feds.
And when does CFC stop?
CFC usually stops just before Christmas. So mid-December is usually the time period.
So 3 weeks in the middle of that's a big chunk for FIA and other
It is. And that's, there are over 20,000 charitable organizations that participate in CFC across the country, and particularly for some of the smaller ones, local organizations that rely on donations in their local community. This is a huge issue. There's a lot of concern among charities that CFC is going to see a dramatic decrease in donations, in part because of the interruption in the campaign period where people might just not be as aware as they normally are that it's going on, but also because we've got federal employees who are still going to be concerned that January 15th represents the possibility for another threat to their paychecks.
Right. It puts a damper on donations. As much as people want to support these good causes, it's a real damper on
that. When you're looking at discretionary things to cut, charitable giving is one of the first things that people cut back on when they need to focus their charity at home, when they need to save a little and be prepared for things.
Right. It makes sense, but it's tough because it's one of those ripple effects of the shutdown is it's going to be affecting all these great organizations that help people.
Right. And, we were talking about it off air a few minutes ago. It's a kind of a catch-22 because these are the organizations that people turn to in times of need. And right. So just at the point when more people potentially are turning to our organizations, we're all seeing a decrease in donations because federal employees aren't as able to give right now.
Right. But they have been very generous over the last few years. So you know, the hope is that maybe, you know, feds do support each other. There is a real community there. So the hope is that people will be able to give what they can during CFC.
That's always our hope. And, you know, we always talk about the fact that even a pledge of a dollar a pay period really does make a difference. People might think it doesn't, but it's a building block for us. And we hope that by now we've gotten the message out there to federal employees that the money that they give to FEA when they pledge to 11185 stays within the federal community, helps other federal employees. So it really is giving a hand up and a hand back to their fellow feds.
Right. So, and they can go to your website, correct, to find out more?
Absolutely. To www.feea.org.
Okay. And let's hope that people are able to do that. So, because there are going to be, I think, as you know, as we've said, I think over the next couple of weeks, we're going to see how the shutdown and the lack of paychecks and just uncertainty going forward is going to affect people. But it'll be interesting in tough times, I think.
Yeah,
still.
I think it's going to take some time before we all really understand the fallout from this.
As we continue on our downer of a show here.
Well, so. you had mentioned that they've extended the CFC period before.
They have. OPM has extended CFC in the past, sometimes when there are natural disasters, sometimes when other things intervene where they feel that feds haven't been able to be aware of the campaign and make their pledges. So we certainly hope that that will happen this year, but there hasn't been any announcement about that yet.
Well, they just got back to work, so we'll give them a few days to
they might have a few
back.
Things on their plate.
So work through that, but we'll be on the lookout for it. And, you know, I did want to talk a little bit about some of the other things we're going to see as going forward from the shutdown. We've seen, you know, clearly the big ticket issues, what they're going to do with Obamacare, what they're going to do with entitlements and taxes and budgets. But I think Congress is going to still look at some other issues, and we're going to see issues come up that affect federal employees because of the shutdown. You know, I think things like chain CPI are still there that I know NARF has been very active on. You guys did a huge rally the other
last week.
It's kind of all a blur all of the shutdown, but you know, you did a rally. That's something that's still out there that will affect all Americans.
Everyone listening, everyone sitting in this room, chain CPI affects the entire country.
And is that something that you think is going to be on the plate this week?
I think it is. For people who are unfamiliar with what the chain CPI is, it's a change in the formula used to calculate annual COLAs. That COLA is used for Social Security benefits, federal annuities, disability benefits, veterans' disability benefits, military retired pay. It affects all facets of people, every facet of federal benefits that you can think of, as well as the tax code. And it sounds complicated, but what it really boils down to is a smaller COLA each year by approximately 0.3%. Okay, so it's 0.3%, not that big a deal in the first year, maybe not that big a deal in a five-year period. But if you are a federal employee looking to retire under CSRS at the age of 55, it is not unreasonable to assume that you could be collecting your federal annuity for the next 25 years. For the average CSRS annuitant who makes about $31,000 in their pension a year, the chain CPI means a loss of $48,000 over that 25-year period. That's inflation-adjusted dollars. It is huge. And that's if you make the average pension of $31,000 a year. You take the FERS employees, whose pension is obviously much smaller. It's more in the nature of less than $1,000 a month.
It's about $12,000 to $13,000
a year. Okay, so it's not a huge chunk to your federal annuity, but those FERS employees are also collecting Social Security. So FERS retirees get hit twice, their FERS annuity and Social Security. Not to mention, if you're a FERS retiree and the COLA is over 2%, you don't even receive the full COLA to begin with. So I feel like FERS are the employees that are really going to be hurting under the chain CPI, and a lot of people refer to it as a technical adjustment. It's a better measure of inflation. But inflation is measured by urban wage earners under the age of 62, those of us sitting in this room, and maybe we do change our buying habits when the price of goods rises. But seniors who don't spend money on big ticket items like electronics the way we do, and who don't have a substitute for prescription drugs, they're on a fixed income. They don't have the ability to substitute the way those with, you know, constantly changing paychecks may have. This will be a huge blow to seniors, and I do very much think it will be part of the conversation in the coming months.
Because it is one of the things, unfortunately, that hits everybody. We talk about things that have hit just federal employees. Change CPI is a hard sell on that sense because it affects everybody. It's fair, if you want to call it that
it's,
way.
It's, I mean, at least shared.
It's at least shared, right. Fair would not be, fair not in the policy, but fair in that it's shared everywhere. So that's going to be a hard one, and I expect NARF's going to be pretty active and vocal on this.
We are very active on this. Our members have really stepped up to the plate in the press conference we held last week to kind of highlight the detrimental effects of this. We asked NARF members to send us coupons. Somewhere along the line, someone referred to the chain CPI as seniors just having to clip a few more coupons. So we set out to collect $48,000 worth of coupons to show what this would mean for the average federal annuity. The NARF members went above and beyond. They sent us hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of coupons. So we asked our coalition partners to join us. We not only highlighted the $48,000 in coupons that federal annuitants would lose, but also $42,000 worth of coupons, which the average military retiree would lose under the chain CPI, and $23,000 worth of coupons, which would be the average loss for a Social Security beneficiary, all over a 25-year period.
Pretty big numbers when you start putting them all together.
Isn't chump change, that's for sure.
And lots of coupons. Lots of boxes of coupons.
yes, lots of coupons that my fellow NARF staff members are very anxious for us to get rid of these days.
So, but I think it's a good visual for people to see it that way because, you know, numbers get big and it's hard to really understand what that impact is. So, you know, one of the other things I wonder if we're going to talk about in a very microcosm way, but if we go back to another shutdown or facing that, is how they're going to exempt people if they're going to try to find ways, because Congress did, and we were talking about this a little bit, they kept finding pockets of people to try to bring back and exempt from furloughs, exempt from the shutdown. You know, are we going to see more action on that? And I know the Senate's got a hearing on the Anti-Deficiency Act at some point.
I think one of the things, though, about that to remember that kind of gets lost here is that even though those folks are still working, they weren't drawing a paycheck.
Right.
And
it's
so
it's not this great thing, and it was no fun day at work for them.
Right. You know, so it's coming to work without all of the resources that you normally have to do your job, without all of the staff that you normally have to do your job, in many cases without the contractors that you also work with.
And you're still not getting paid.
And then, by the way, we're not really sure when we're going to give you a paycheck. You will get paid for it, but we're not sure when.
So it'll be interesting to see if Congress revisits it, because the act was made back in 1884. So, you know, is this something we're going to look at as how we handle a government shutdown if we keep facing government shutdowns? So, and it's, you know, at this point, it's anybody's guess if we'll keep going down this road. My hope is no, but you just never know in this day and age. So I think we'll see some of that. I think healthcare benefits may be something that's talked about, because those were also in Simpson Bowles. So
I think a pay freeze is really what has me the most nervous in the immediate term for federal employees, because I think based on the legislation that passed this week, I think a lot of feds will be expecting that 1% pay raise, as has been reported by many media outlets. And right now, that would in fact be the case. But that piece of legislation only extends to January 15th, and there is a lot that can happen that feds need to be aware of.
Right. And I think that's what we'll be talking about in the next coming weeks and coming months, and everybody's watching. Real quick, Jesse, can you give me NARF's website so people can go find more information?
Absolutely. It's www.narfe.org.
And one more time for FEA.
FEA is www.feea.org. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Feds Helping Feds.
Into the social media age. I want to thank everybody for coming, and shout out to Megan and the folks at NAGE for talking to us about their issues as well. This show is brought to you by the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Have a good weekend.